Welcome to the 7th episode of the 5th season of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday the 22nd of May 2012, and in this episode, we're going to talk about UDS and interview Jason Warner, Engineering Manager at Canonical. We will, of course, cover the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, tomorrow's technology today, and go over your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Mark, and with me this week are Tony.
Hello.
Laura.
Hello.
And back from his travels, Mr. Alan Pope.
Bonjour.
Oui, oui.
So, let's start with you, Tony. What have you been up to?
Oh, hello, Mark. I've been enjoying the nice weather we've been having today.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It was almost...
I can smell barbecue in the distance.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
Had a snack on the way down. It was almost too nice to do a podcast. I did think about ditching the whole thing and sitting in the garden for a couple of hours.
I'll get you. Like, you have the ability to ditch the whole thing.
Like, you just not put the sound desk out.
Yeah. The man with the big buttons. Yes. So, that was very nice. I'm enjoying the weather. Went and did a photo shoot with my parents a couple of weeks ago,
cool.
Which was quite interesting because it's a bit of a different dynamic.
Uh-huh.
But they listened to this. So hopefully they'll enjoy the results.
Careful what you say.
They haven't seen them yet, so hopefully they will enjoy them when they do. But yeah, it was fun. Got to see their new caravan as well. Not a on-the-road caravan, a static. Static home. Pope caravan.
Anyway, moving on.
Laura.
Hello.
What have you been doing with yourself?
I've been reading books on my new Kindle.
That's the one that you told us about on the last show.
Yes. Yes, I have. I've read 3 books. Since I got it.
Is that more books than you were reading before you got a Kindle?
I'm still reading the books that I was reading before I got a Kindle, but I read the 3 Being Human novels as well. Quite quickly.
Did you buy the books, or did you put the books
did
on?
Did you download them?
Go on, what's your question?
No, I was just wondering if you bought them directly from the Amazon store, or whether you got them via some other way and put them via software or something.
I downloaded them from the Amazon store, partly because I've been selling back an awful lot of books to the Amazon trading, and I've got about 100 quid's worth of gift vouchers.
I didn't know you could trade in books.
Oh, yeah.
It's very cool.
If you've got old university textbooks.
Yeah, anything that's valuable like that.
And not readily available.
Yeah. And just credit gift cards. We shouldn't be promoting this. Let's move on.
Unless they want to give us, you know.
It's all right. There isn't an Ubuntu bookstore yet.
Oh, so that's all right.
It's
yet.
Fair game.
I noticed yet.
Yeah.
So, Alan.
That's his NDA smile.
Alan, we all know where you've been.
Do you?
Cushions.
But tell us anyway.
Yeah, I was at UDS, but more about UDS later. I've been playing with the Raspberry Pi.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Which is sitting around here somewhere in an attractive plastic case.
Yes.
Cool
one
case.
Of the local Linux user groups designed and made, not glass, what's it called? The
plastic.
Perspex.
Yeah, like see-through plastic cases for it. And I bought one of those. And so it feels a bit more safe. Hmm. Not a bare circuit board in my hand. it's quite good fun, that.
Brilliant. Cool. What have you done with it?
So far, I've put it in the case.
Brilliant.
And I've tried Debian on it, and
I
had a bit of a play and tried some of the programming tools that are on there. There's like, you know, various text editors for programming, and there's also Scratch, which I already have on my machine, and my daughter's played with a little bit.
What is it?
Scratch is like a visual programming tutor thing. It's a bit like Logo. On crack. It's like, you know, you
turtle on crack.
Yeah, a turtle. It's a cat, actually. Scratch the cat. Yeah, there you go, you see. But you drag building blocks of your program. So you build in a start, you drag in a start block, and you can drag in loops and conditions, and you can make the sprites and stuff move about, and then do different, react to their environment. And it's pretty cool, actually. And you do sound effects and all that kind of stuff. And I gave Sophie the computer running Scratch, and she had a play with it, and she thought it was great fun.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Excellent.
It's good fun.
Fair enough.
How about you, Mark?
I got a little bit older, as is the tradition.
Didn't as old all? As some of us.
What did you do for your birthday?
I went out to the local metal establishment.
The scrapyard down the road.
Yes. That was it.
We established right. It's where young people go.
Yes, where them young'uns go and them who are getting older go.
That's pretty, I'm surprised they let you in then.
I've also...
You've got the old man off pat, really nice.
I also had a bit of a play with Tiberium Alliances, which is one of the new games in the software center from EA.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
EA Sports, it's in the game.
Okay.
Yeah, that EA. And
is it any good?
It's, you know, a nice distraction for maybe an hour or so. It's not Command & Conquer. If you've played Command & Conquer and you're expecting it to be a new installment in the series, it really isn't. But
it's a good way to waste a birthday.
Yeah, basically.
Or an hour of a birthday.
Yeah, it's fun to play around with for a couple of hours. It's all JavaScript and Canvas in browser. It's not Flash-based.
Did you install it from the software center?
I installed the shortcut which opens Firefox from the software center, yes.
Right.
But I figured it would be nice because that way EA would get a little referral thing pop up saying this person accessed it from Ubuntu.
Smart move.
So, excellent. Yeah. There we go. Very much so. Right.
Shall we get on with the show?
All right.
Yes.
Now, you may remember that Alan wasn't here last episode because he was on his holidays. We have proof of this. We have seen you pictures of you in beachwear carrying an inflatable ball.
Terrible beachwear.
Yes. So now, this is, I know for a fact, this is what you wear when you're on holiday.
Can I just explain that photo that's going around of me wearing hideous beachwear? At every UDS on the Friday, there's like a party at the end because everyone's worked really, really hard. I'm on the Friday, have a few drinks, listen to some music. And there's always a theme and everyone always dresses up. You may have seen pictures of Jono Bacon dressed up as the Beefy Miracle last time. And everyone dresses up. And this time, I seem to be the only one who got the memo that it was time to dress up. So I did, and nobody else did.
Is that what they do to new employees?
Seems that way, yes.
It's a hazing. What was the theme?
California beach party.
Oh, okay.
So inside a hotel in the conference area, we had volleyball, boule, and loads of like benches that you'd get on a beach and stuff. It's quite cool. Well, nice way to unwind.
Having seen the photos, 10 out of 10 for effort.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My
and
wife
effect.
Said she's going to burn it.
We have a picture of Tony's dad in an outfit like that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
He that wasn't fancy dress. That was the thing.
Yeah.
He really wore that.
Moving on.
Yes. So the real reason you were in America, San Francisco area, was for the Ubuntu Developer Summit. So seeing as you were there, tell us what happened.
As happens at every UDS, there's loads of planning for the next release. So the next release of Ubuntu in October this year is Quantel Quetzal, the code name, but it will be 12.
Quetzal.
All right. and that'll be 12.10.
Yeah.
And so there's loads of sessions at UDS. Each session is about an hour long. And it's very intense, and we try and plan out what's going to be happening over the course of the next few months that lead up to 12.10. And so I've made some notes here of some of the key decisions that were made. None of it's set in stone.
Yep.
It's all, you know, up in the air, and things may change, and, you know, some of this might actually not end up happening, or there might not be enough time for some of it. So I just thought we'd talk about some of it.
Cool. Okay, so there are different streams at UDS, things like Desktop Foundation, Community, that sort of thing. So if we start with Foundations, one of the things that we heard about was the proposition to get rid of the alternate CD, or the alternate CD, alternatively, and just have one single installer.
Yeah, so the alternate CD is part of the reason for it existing is because some people like to install and use LVM and RAID and other... Yeah. What you might call advanced options. And currently the live CD doesn't have the facility to do that, and it never has. And so what they want to do is add those features into Ubiquiti, which is the installer, so that then effectively we can get rid of the alternate CD.
Sounds like a good idea to me. I wanted to, because I ended up, due to some unfortunate partitioning decisions I made a few years ago, when I came to upgrade my main home desktop to 1204, I basically had to
reformat it and start again after backing up all my data carefully. And I found it really annoying that I had to get a different CD just because I wanted to use LVM.
Ah. So technically, you can do RAID and LVM with the live CD.
You have to download and install LVM. Yeah, you have first to like and then do it from the command line
exactly,
yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Which, if you're an advanced user,
yeah,
it might save you the however long it takes to download the alternate CD if you're that minded. Mm. I've done that before. Wanted to like, do RAID and
there's also the thing about it being a console based installer that means that it will run on things that you don't have access to or only have access over serial console or.
Yep.
It's not that dissimilar from the server.
Well, we still have the NetInst, the mini ISO, and that's always been there. And then, like you say, there's also the server CD. I'm not sure if the alternate CD is actually going to completely go away. I think people might actually have use cases like that, installing over a serial console, where, you know. But if you're doing it over a serial console, arguably you're doing a server install.
Yes.
Not a desktop.
Yes. So. Yeah, fair enough. What about the crash database then?
So one of the problems is we get a load of bugs filed, and a lot of them are filed by people who aren't really technically minded or inclined to interact with developers. And so they might fire and forget a bug. And that can be frustrating for a developer because the developer wants to get that fixed. But sometimes the users don't come back with technical information. I think they want to improve that so that it makes it easier for users to file bugs and easier for developers to get access to the technical information. You know, what video card did you have? What was the state of the machine at the time and all that kind of stuff. Basically want to improve that whole workflow around filing and getting bugs fixed.
It's a bit more of a formal support process, isn't it? There's going to have to be a boundary between the paid for support that you get and this is done by the community support.
But it's not so much support. It's more, fixing bugs, which support is more, you know.
Support covers a wider range of things than just that, I agree. But it does cover partly that.
Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they figure that out.
A mystery. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Desktop?
Yes.
That is a word in the dictionary.
That came out quite differently from how it was in my head.
Stop!
So, improved flicker-free boot, apparently, is one of the things.
Yeah, we keep saying this.
Yeah, it sounds painfully familiar.
Yeah. I think it's difficult because, we've got so much legacy of stuff that... we need to move away from, and so many little bits that aren't quite done yet to get that whole seamless, all the way from turning the machine on all the way to your desktop with no, you know, console style screens, no flashing cursors in the corner, no changes of video mode that cause the screen to, you know, go out of sync and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, is that what does it?
Yeah, well, that's some of the thing, and changing video mode. As you move from one program to another. So one thing that happens now is X starts very early on in the boot process. So rather than you have a logon screen that's one program, and then when you typed in your password, you press enter, then X starts.
Yeah.
So there's a flicker between one program and the next. We start X really, really early on. And so the logon screen is running in X. And then you just fade from the logon screen to the desktop.
So that's already one less thing, major thing.
Yeah.
Right.
So any good ideas about how to do this? I mean, are we talking about re-implementing X in Haskell or something?
I think there's some discussion about the making changes to the way the compositor works so that it's the compositor being comp is the desktop compositor thing. Yes.
The bit which draws the windows and makes them all transparent and wobbly.
Yes. To smooth that process. I don't know the details, but yeah, that's the plan. Next.
Okay, I'll go next.
Sorry, I was trying to read, but my brain wasn't engaged.
Supporting only Unity 3D. I noticed before you said Ubuntu and Ubiquiti, so should this be Unity?
I don't know. You know me, I don't really care how people pronunciate things.
Yeah, it's not the pronunciation show, is it?
So
yeah,
supporting only 3D and removing 2D.
Yeah, so it was announced that we're going to focus on Unity rather than the QML 2D version.
Right.
So in the future, there will only be Unity 3D on the CD.
So what will people without 3D acceleration do?
They will use LLVM pipe.
What?
Apt-get LLVM pipe.
It's basically software rendering in the CPU.
Oh, rather, okay.
Rather, right. Because you haven't got a GPU.
Yes.
So it does the rendering in the CPU.
Right.
So will you select it in the same way as you select 2D now?
No. So I don't think so. The way I understand it is you just log on, and if it detects you've got a GPU capable of 3D acceleration, you get all the effects turned on and everything works really smoothly. If you don't have a GPU that's capable of 3D acceleration, then you still get some effects. And I know some of the Unity guys were discussing, you know, how do we detect what you've got, and then how do we gracefully give you like the absolute maximum that your machine is capable of doing without pushing it to the point that your machine becomes, you know, unusable and slow.
Mm. Okay, what about the control center? We're going to have our own Ubuntu version of the control center.
Yeah, so there's the GNOME control center. That thing when you go to system settings in the corner of the screen is GNOME or GNOME control center. Again, not the pronunciation show. but we've patched this quite heavily in Ubuntu to add in stuff that either GNOME don't want in GNOME Control Center because, for whatever reason, they don't think it's appropriate, or it doesn't fit with their human interface guidelines or whatever reasons. So we carry a bunch of patches, and every time we get a new version of GNOME Control Center, we then have to apply all those patches to turn it into the control center that we want for our users.
So is this a fork of GNOME Control Center, or is it a re-implementation?
Neither.
Or do we not know?
Kind of. Yeah, it's not really a fork. And they are interested in like pushing these patches back to GNOME so that, you know, everyone else can benefit from whatever changes that we've put in.
Mm. Okay.
That's the goal anyway. But, you know, in the event that we can't, then we'll just have to carry our own version of it.
So proxy support being added to Network Manager. I've heard you vile against Network Manager for this very reason.
Not Network Manager, just in general Linux desktop.
Not now you work from home, apparently that's not a problem.
Yeah, now I work from home and I have no proxy server, I don't care. No.
I like transparent proxies.
Well, the problem is even with like transparent proxies, if you're on a corporate network and they have a transparent proxy and your web browser, you know, has no knowledge and all the traffic is just redirected, that's all fine. But what about all the other applications that use odd protocols and stuff that don't necessarily go over that transparent proxy so easily and are blocked at the firewall? That kind of stuff is broken.
A lot of problems with that when I was at uni, because the network we had in halls went through a proxy and you could configure it for your web browser, but then everything else you had to configure to go over the web so that it could go through the proxy, otherwise it couldn't get out.
You had network in your halls.
Oh, we had an amazing network in our halls.
Playing Doom.
No, we had a network. Yeah, the internet connection went through the university's Janet connection, basically.
Yeah,
via a proxy.
So this isn't really about improving proxy support in applications. This is more about putting all of the networky type stuff in one place. Because at the moment, if you want to connect to a wireless network, you click that icon in the corner and then you choose your wireless network. But if you've got a proxy, then you have to go to system settings and find some other setting in there and put in a jumble of letters and numbers, and then it kind of works. And it's not really seamless. And the same goes for firewall. We don't actually ship a graphical way of managing a firewall on Ubuntu. So maybe we will.
Mm. Mm. There's a kernel coming. 3.5 kernel.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is, you know.
Kernel news.
Well, The interesting thing about this, if you can pluck something interesting from the kernel, is that 12.04 ships with, what is it, 3.2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a long-term support release.
Yes.
So that's going to last for 5 years. So we're going to support 3.2 for 5 years. But what we're also going to do is kernels that are built for 12.10 can also be built for 12.04. So if you buy a server in 3 years' time, and that server has new hardware in it that's not supported on the current 3.2 kernel, you're probably going to be better supported by the 3.6 kernel or 3.5 kernel that's in 12.10. so you could run that and still be supported. You're not, you know, running a wacky kernel that we don't support.
I like that. It means I might get support for my Freeview XD tuner.
Wonder.
Okay. Yeah. Freeview sorry, XD. I thought you were talking about the TV network that's being switched off. But...
No.
we're on digital already.
Yeah, we've got everything around this neck of the woods. Right, rapidly we need to move over QA, growth and recognition in community effort. Try not to burn people out.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I think they want to motivate people to want to contribute. And one of the ways in which they want to do that is...
Is it a Hall of Heroes? Hall of Fame?
No. I think it's more free stuff.
Oh,
basically,
all right.
You know, like T-shirts. How do we get this free stuff? And stuff. Well, you have to, you have to contribute.
You have to do a podcast for 5 years.
Just five?
And one of the things they want to do is maybe during the development cycle between now and when 12.10 releases, if you download the ISO image before release day and you run it, it should pop up with a box saying, I see you're running the pre-release. You know, maybe a little paperclip could pop up. I see you're running the development release. How would you like to, you know, contribute and test and help us figure out that all this stuff works?
Could be interesting.
Which is good. In fact, if you run Unity from the PPA, it already does that. It already says you're running Unity from the PPA. It would really help us if you tested it out, and it pops up the checkbox thing and you just go through the tests.
Cool.
So, yeah, that would be really useful.
Yes.
And the release of 12.04.1 is being pushed back to the 23rd of August.
Yeah, I don't know the rationale for that, but...
When would it have been released?
June, July sometime, right. I think. No, July.
What is it?
It's
Service Pack 1.
So you know this you know this Ubuntu thing, right?
Yeah.
Right. So...
12.04, that was last month.
For LTSs, it's got a we desktop. Do point releases, which are respins of the ISO with updated packages. So if you buy a newer piece of hardware, you get a...
Oh, I see.
And also so that you don't install 12.04 and then have a gazillion packages to install afterwards.
That makes sense.
So we do one of those. I think we do four of them or something.
Throughout
the life of that LTS. Yeah.
Cool.
Mm. I think that's about it, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Well, thank you very much indeed for your Ubuntu Developer Summit update, Alan.
That's all right. Can we have a jingle for that? It's time for the news. According to traffic monitoring service StatCounter, Chrome unseated Internet Explorer as the world's most popular browser last week. The service's stats show Firefox's share levelling off at about 25% at the start of the year, while Chrome has continued to take share from Internet Explorer since.
Hooray! Yeah, it's very exciting.
I wonder if that's mainly down to the fact that lots of people use Google, and in the top right-hand corner of the screen it just nags you to install Chrome all the time.
I was quite surprised to see Chrome being adopted within corporate environments a bit more.
Really?
I know, well, people had to fight for a lot to get to Firefox
in
as a supported version, but now people don't seem to care.
Well, I think probably...
Not just about Firefox.
Oh, whatever. Install what you want.
Yeah.
Because at the time, Internet Explorer was the only browser people had to say, oh, install this free browser from this charity, whereas it's a bit of an easier argument to say... this is from Google. Everyone knows what Google is.
And they're going to take all of your corporate data.
Right, thank you for that. Startup company Leap Motion have unveiled the Leap, allegedly, a 3D motion tracking system the size of a USB stick. Leap Motion claim their device is 100 times more accurate than Microsoft's Kinect and will retail for around $70.
Do you know what gets... There's a thing that in the video that's got this slab on the desk... And in the video, the guy puts his hands out in front of him to, like, wave around and, like, Minority Report style, you know. And in the video, it shows him putting his hands towards and away.
Yeah.
And on the screen, it shows a rendering of his fingers. How does it know what the tops of his fingers look
I
like?
I did wonder about that myself when I looked at it. Because, I mean, when you look at videos of what the Kinect sees... It's one face, isn't it?
Exactly. It's only, you know, line of sight. Well, you, like, you know... I just couldn't fathom that. Maybe that's why it's gathering so much attention. It can see round corners to the tops of your fingers.
Yes.
Microsoft has launched Socal.
Social.
It's so cool.
Yeah. Isn't it the chemical formula for salt?
and chlorine.
What is it anyway?
Is that NaCl?
NaCl, yeah.
Probably. It's an experimental social network aimed at learning communities.
So, who's on Socal? Alan?
Yeah, I am. I stand up, of course.
Awesome. Yeah.
And the only thing I've posted is that we're live with this podcast right now. And that's it.
I thought it was supposed to be a learning community.
Well, very good, yeah.
It's definitely not Google Plus. It looks nothing like Google Plus, and there's no similar features. Am I right?
Well, in the same way that Diaspora looks exactly the same as Google Plus. Yes.
Sadly.
They are all kind of becoming one
homogenous lump.
No, one separate set of social networks.
That don't look like Facebook.
Yeah.
Cool. The Punjab government has started handing out free Ubuntu-based laptops to new college and university students. While the Punjab Information Technology Board has lauded the move, some students have suggested it's just an attempt to win over younger voters.
Is that how you win younger voters? By giving them free
Ubuntu laptops?
With Ubuntu on them.
That's how you get community members to do some work, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we should learn from
it. It was, 120,000-ish laptops.
Does it say what spec they are or who's made them or anything?
I don't know.
No, I didn't notice it.
But... It struck me something else you said before, that many laptops compared to the amount of people who are in India is, almost rounding error. Not that I want to put down, people giving away free Ubuntu laptops.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Version 3.4 of the Linux kernel has been released, sporting better support for ButterFS. Yay! And updated graphics drivers. With 3.3 released on the 19th of March, this represents the quickest major version release in Linux's history.
So are the new major versions basically now like the old minor versions, and they've just changed moved the decimal point?
Yeah. So I've updated my home server to 3.4.
And did you compile it yourself?
Nope, because Ubuntu provides a PPA with the latest kernel in. It was in there yesterday, so I put it on there this morning.
Is the world a better place?
Well, my ButterFS volume is probably a better place, yes.
Right. Excellent. Long-standing low-end chip manufacturer Avaya have announced APC, a low-power ARM version 6-based computer which could rival the popular gadget du jour, the Raspberry Pi. Maybe that should be gadget du jour. Powered by the WM8750 chip, it sports numerous standard PC connectors, including HDMI and VGA. The APC is dubbed by Avaya a bicycle for your mind.
That sounds painful.
Yes, it looks quite cute, actually. It looks like a more professionally designed Raspberry Pi, to be honest.
Is that basically what it is?
Well, it's made by a company that have a very long tradition of making computer devices and motherboards and chips and stuff. So, yeah.
The one thing I noticed is that they've got two USB ports with a network port above it, which actually means it's quite high.
Right.
Whereas...
I think that's a standard, isn't it? That configuration. It's a nano ITX.
Quite possibly. But I think compared with the Raspberry Pi, where, it's a bit lower.
It's running Android, apparently.
Yeah, ships with Android 2.something.
Of course, they can't get Ubuntu on it, can they?
Not yet.
Not yet.
But yeah, it was quite cute. And yet another gadget.
It's another thing for you to buy and hope that Lester Lug make a case for.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the end of the news.
And we've got some events for you happening now at a pub in Farnham.
Shepherd and Flock.
Right.
In Farnham.
Now as in when we're going out live.
Yeah, right now.
Okay. So if you're listening and you're in Farnham, get down there. No, don't. Carry on listening to us. SH Hackspace, which I guess is Surrey and Hampshire?
Yes.
And you can find out more about them at sh-hackspace.org.uk.
Cool. Okay, what's the next event? Laura.
NHS Hack Day. 26th and 27th of May. So that's next week? This weekend?
Yes.
This weekend. No idea what it's about.
It's like
it sounds very cool, like BBC Hack Day or the Guardian Hack Day.
It's like getting people together to hack on health-related stuff.
Oh, yeah. So it's nhshackday.com.
Interesting. Plus, we've got OggCamp, the ever-present, ever-famous OggCamp.
Yes.
Loads more info on the website, OggCamp.org.
Yes.
Anything new, Alan?
Probably, yes, but you'd have to look at the website to find out.
Yes, updates will be going on there as they come in.
It's that live.
It's still in Liverpool, though.
It's still in Liverpool.
We've started... Oh, actually, interestingly, Virgin Trains tickets have just gone on sale. So if you want to get the train, you can do, and you can book now if you want to get a slightly cheaper ticket.
Is there a special Okkamp Express?
No, there isn't.
But from some places, it's cheaper than from others.
Yes.
And if you buy lots of tickets instead of one long ticket, it's also cheaper.
Yes.
But get in early, connections.
Get to Okkamp. Last but not least, there's a Bitcoin conference. Mark, tell us about that.
That's in Russell Square in London on the 15th to the 16th of September. That's just over a month before Okkamp.
Do you think people will take their Bitcoins along in a big wheelbarrow to the conference?
I don't know. I think they'll be a bit heavy for that. You can find out more at Bitcoin2012.com.
Excellent.
Easy for you to say.
Hello, and welcome to Tomorrow's Technology Today. I'm Douglas Austin Cambridge. Good day to all our listeners, wherever you are around the British Empire. It's good day to my delightful co-host, Miss Deirdre Morris Oxford.
Good day, Douglas.
Do you think you could pronounce my name correctly just once in a while? In this programme, we'll be going through the contents of our post bag, containing written correspondence from our listeners.
Speaking of post bags, Douglas, it is thought that in 60 years' time, all mail will be sent electronically.
Why, you silly sausage, Deirdre. Wherever would you stick the postage stamp?
I know where you could stick your postage stamp.
Why? On a beautiful envelope from the British Imperial Stationery Company, of course.
Do you happen to be a shareholder of that particular company?
Perhaps. Anyway, on to our listeners' correspondence. A Mr. I M Floundering, in Poole, writes to ask, Dear Douglas, do you think...
Think what, Douglas?
Actually, we've only got half the letter. The bottom part was ripped off in the post.
What else do we have?
An empty envelope. It seems to have fallen apart.
What else?
We have this apology from the General Post Office. Apparently, slugs climb inside the post boxes and eat the glue in the envelopes. What we need is good old-fashioned British ingenuity to invent the slug-proof post box.
Or slug-proof glue. Oh, this one appears to be for you, Douglas.
Who is it from?
Your wife's solicitors. I thought your wife had left you, Douglas.
Yes, she has.
With a car salesman from Birkenhead?
He owns a car factory and half of Wales.
So that's it? Half a letter, an empty envelope, and your divorce papers?
Yes.
What we need is some instantaneous wireless telegraphy that allows us to chat with the audience in real time during the programme.
Don't be silly, Deirdre. Why ever would anyone want to do that? Well, that's all from Tomorrow's Technology Today. A toodle-pip and God save the king.
So we found a quiet room away from everyone else making loads of noise. And I'm here with Jason Warner, who's engineering manager for desktop in Ubuntu. So tell me what's been the last 6 months. Well, describe how the last 6 months has been for you.
Well, it's an LTS cycle, and we had a lot of interesting things we had to do in the LTS cycle. So we had to do stabilization. We had to land Unity and make sure it was polished. We had a lot of other things we wanted to do. But the most exciting thing was to see that our sustained efforts in stability and quality paid off. They paid off early, and they paid off in a big way. I think everyone saw throughout all the press releases for 1204 that it was noticed and appreciated the effort that was put in. And even more so than that, it made a real difference in the perception of Ubuntu. So I'm very happy to see the way that it was adopted.
So when you say stability, Mark blogged sometime early on that He wanted to see a stable release all the way through the development cycle. And, you know, we've had a reputation in the past where, you know, if you upgrade to alpha, then things will likely break. How do you actually realize that goal of having a stable development, or, you know, as Mark alluded to, like a rolling release through the development cycle?
Well, it was an interesting engineering cycle, to say the least. We basically took it the goal of saying we wanted to have the image every day be buildable and usable, and we want zero downtime. So we didn't actually say which engineering approach we wanted to take. We actually started with the end in mind. Given that, we knew that we had to adopt certain best practices or to change some of the things that we were doing, and there were several things that we did. So briefly, some of the things that we did was we spun off a team that all they did was they looked at the archive maintenance and said that the archive needs to be pristine, and they worked day and night tirelessly to ensure that that was the case. We also started to put in automated tests every day so we could look at a dashboard to see what broke where and where we needed to dive in. We had very intelligent reporting saying this package X, Y, or Z tend to be getting a lot of bugs, so we could dive in there. And we did a lot of work with canonical upstreams. So you'll hear a lot of this if you look at the old proceedings about canonical upstreams. And so what we had done for the Unity team in particular is we said that for packages coming from canonical upstreams to enter the distro, the Ubuntu release itself, they had to meet certain quality criteria. So putting those gates in place guaranteed that certain practices on both ways, as I say, the API between the two groups, the handshake was good. And for the most part, everything worked fine. It increased communications across teams and groups, upstream groups, whether inside of Canonical or outside of Canonical. And it allows us to focus on the various problems. There was, I think, one day throughout the cycle where something broke. And what I loved about that is not only did people notice that the one day, they got mad. And they got mad because it was down for that one day. So it's interesting how quickly the community adopts something, says, oh, this is great. I can use it every day. I don't have to worry about it. I've been using, you hear the stories all the time. I've been using Ubuntu 12.04 since the very first alpha, even pre-alpha, and it was perfectly stable. And then, but you guys had that one day where it was down. Previous cycles, there would be several days or weeks even where something was broken, and, you know, that was business as usual. I like that business as usual for this cycle was it wasn't broken. And that's going to be business. That is business as usual at this point. We will be going forward. Nothing will be broken.
So you talked about more tests and putting controls in place that you wouldn't accept packages from canonical upstream into distro unless they met certain criteria. How did you implement that change in the developer's mindset to add increased tests to packages and to add those additional controls in before they hit the distro?
It's always an interesting proposition to change for change. I mean, we see this with Unity when change comes down, people don't like it. So developers are humans as well. So you don't want to change either mode of operations or style of code or style of work. So it's always perceived to be that if you're starting to test, you're entering lag, you're entering an extra step into the system and it'll slow them down. And that may have actually been the case initially, but what happens, and I think any proponent of test-driven development or test-first development will say, is that at some point, the rate of return increases, and the fact that you're working on a stable system, you're working off of something that isn't shifting sand beneath you, and if you need to make an invasive change, you're guaranteed that that change won't affect some other part of the system because you have the what I call the safety net follows tests, increases speed dramatically. And so there was a period of time during the initial part of the cycle where investment had to be made upfront to increase infrastructure or to make some small architectural changes between components to make sure that they were testable. And then at the end, it allowed us to move very quickly because we could accept packages or we could accept changes that we traditionally would never have at that point in the cycle because we had the guarantee, not so much the guarantee, but the
acceptance that you would be doing.
Yes, and the confidence that the tests caught regressions. And without those, we would have thrown our hands up in the air and said, it looks like it's not affecting anything else. We haven't had feedback it's not affecting anything else. But with the tests, we can guarantee it wasn't affecting anything else because the test still passed.
Right. Cool. And so I guess you, along with you and everyone else that seems pretty happy with the 12.04, at least I assume you're happy with what we put out as an end result.
I'm ecstatic about it. I think it's great. And I wasn't using the internal team for as the barometer for this, but the internal team was very happy. But so far, the external world loves it. The press loves it. And even people who in the industry itself, OEMs and stuff, are coming back saying, this is great. It's stable. We can build upon it. We took it into our shop earlier to use our stability testing. People put it through there. So love hearing that. I love hearing seeing that it's paying off.
So with 1204 development now stopped and we're working on 1210, what things have you got to look forward to over the next 6 or maybe 12 months? What things are capturing your imagination?
For me, it's with the announcement of the TV, the Ubuntu for Android project, those things obviously created a lot of buzz in the community when they were announced. I am really excited to see where those lead and how quickly they can go. It's places that traditionally open source projects have never been. Android is an exception in that it's the way it's structured and the way the OEMs have engaged with it. But to be pervasive across all these different clients and device types is fascinating to me. And I think that we're uniquely positioned to dramatically impact that market, or all of those markets, in such a way and bring cohesiveness across all of them too, with desktop being the central component in that.
Does that take away any focus from desktop? And I know a lot of people are concerned that Canonical's reaching out to all these other areas with new products, Ubuntu for Android, TV, and then in the future maybe phones, tablets, toasters, and whatever. Are we taking away from what is our core competency, which is the desktop and the server?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that the desktop and the server are always going to remain, and the desktop in particular is basically going to be central to all those different components. It'll be interesting to see if you had a spider diagram of all the different spider web diagram of all the different devices and how they would interact and things that you could do with them. The desktop is always going to be one of those you can come back to and say, and with this device, the way this works, we can do this on the desktop, and your desktop experience would be fantastic. And I do think that there's going to, we will definitely see increased usage of alternate devices, phones, tablets, TVs, things like that. But I don't think that you're going to see a dramatic decrease in usage of desktops over the next however many years that these things start to happen. I think what you'll see is they will play a more central role in people's lives in terms of content management, syncing, making sure that data is available on all their different devices. But if you looked at your, I'm holding my hand for an audio interview, but if you had your hand in place, the desktop is a finger on your hand along with all the other devices, and they just all need to play well together. Now, the interesting thing about the way we build Ubuntu is that the desktop components that we build for Ubuntu are needed for all the other client devices. So there's no way that the desktop will not impact all the other client devices.
One comment that I hear a lot is that, especially amongst people who don't like Unity, is that they feel the Unity itself was designed for a touch interface and was designed for a phone or a tablet, and then it's been crowbarred onto a desktop operating system. How do you feel about that kind of comment that we see a lot in the press and in the community?
So this is a non-designer's perspective on this. I'm not a designer by any stretch of the word. I don't see that. I use Unity every day. I've used Unity from its first incarnation on the Ubuntu Desktop Remix, and then in 11.04 and 11.10. And you could see that there was an approach, a methodical approach to the vision of Unity, and then eventually getting it to the point where it is now. So it's been iterative, and you could tell that there was a thought to it. Obviously, I don't think the name Unity was chosen lightly. It's supposed to be a unifying interface across multiple different interfaces. And I believe that if you use your imagination even just a little bit, you can see how it could work. As you said, most people think that it was designed to be a touch interface. And I don't think that's the case. I think it was designed to be a cohesive interface, but something that could scale up or down. Now, that concept doesn't really exist yet, so it might be jarring to some people. But you see that Apple is trying something. Microsoft is trying something. I guess the jury's out on if either one of them are going to be ultimately successful in that. This is our attempt at something similar.
So we've got one day down nearly of UDS, and we've got 4 days left to go. Are there any particularly interesting sessions that you want to be a part of, that you want to get involved with, or you want to see more community participation in?
I think for me, I'm the desktop manager. All the desktop sessions are always interesting to me to see exactly where we're going. I come from a traditional startup web background, so everything the server is doing is fascinating to me. I love Juju. I love Maz. I love what's going on over there. Had I had any of those tools 5 years ago when I was in the startup company, my life would have been so much easier. So in many ways, I look at that saying, dang it. But at the same time, I think it's utterly fascinating, and it's just amazing to see. So I think that I'd like to see more community developers get interested in Juju and understand what it can do and where it can go, because I think that it will be their socks will be blown off and their lives will be so much easier. So I'm excited to see that. And I think that they should take a look.
And in terms of your team's work in Canonical, obviously there's people out there in the community who get involved in Ubuntu Desktop because, you know, they see it every day and, you know, they file bugs and triage. Is there any additional things you would want from the community? Anyone, if they were listening at home and, you know, they're using their Ubuntu Desktop and maybe thinking, you know, what could I do? And any advice you could give them on how they could contribute?
So if they're general users who just like Ubuntu and want to contribute back, I say get in touch and start filing bugs. Any bug is better. If you have an opinion about something or if you want to see something change, a bug is the way to go. I say if you're an application developer who uses Ubuntu or wants to target the Ubuntu platform, we want high-end applications. Get in touch with anybody in the desktop team and they'll start helping out and want to work with you to get those things done. As you can see, we're trying to up the design game in open source, and anyone who's interested in being at the forefront of that, being on a platform that's only going to grow, this is the place to be.
Brilliant. Thanks very much for your time, Jason.
Thanks.
And it's time for a bit about Ubuntu.
It certainly is.
Let's do that now.
Okay. So Mark Shuttleworth has proposed a new invitation-only mailing list for Unity discussion with a view to focusing discussions on new ideas and avoiding going over old ground.
Wow. Is he taking his ball with him?
So the problem is there's a Unity design mailing list, okay, and it's on Launchpad. So you join this team and then you subscribe to the mailing list, and then anyone can do that, and anyone can just mash their head on the keyboard and send a mail to the list. And they can do that repeatedly with the same content all the time, and it really gets quite annoying when you're not actually talking about ways in which you're progressing the product and innovative ideas about Unity.
Is it all, why are the buttons on the left?
Yeah,
it's that
kind of
stuff.
One of the examples.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, it's why did they get rid of Dodge Windows? And, you know, that's already been articulated numerous times in various places, and it's getting a bit tedious.
Filling up inboxes.
Yeah, and it's time consuming, and, you know, developers and the designers just don't want to waste their time answering the same question over and over again. We get that some people don't like decisions that are made, but the fact is the decision has been made. The CD is out there. You know, let's move on.
Yeah.
Isn't there a bit of a risk that it becomes a forum in which people perhaps don't feel they can express creative, constructive criticism?
If it's
a invitation only list,
well,
I think
invitation only might not be the
right
way of phrasing it. It's more that once you've proved that, you know, you're not an idiot, that you can articulate design ideas
right
without just reiterating the same question over and over again, then, you know, you can participate on this list, because there's a bunch of people who are just, you know, going over the same old ground.
Trolls, almost.
Well, not quite trolls, but, you know,
frustrated
People who don't necessarily read every mail on the list. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's vital that you read every mail of every list you're on, but if you're going to participate, then at least, you know, you should be able to read the ones that contain the answer to the question that you're asking.
Search the archive first before you make the same point again.
It's pretty basic, really.
Mailing list etiquette, isn't it?
101.
The Ubuntu forums have finally updated the theme to reflect the new visual design.
It looks really nice.
It does, actually, yes. And I noticed that help.ubuntu.com has changed as well.
Yes, that one got a refresh as well.
Which was long overdue.
Yeah. Problem is the web team have like loads of websites that they have to update.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And, you know, some of them just got left by the wayside. And also, one of the problems with Ubuntu forums is it's running a different piece of software than anything else. So we've got loads of Drupal sites, we've got loads of WordPress sites, and once you've done a theme for one of them, you can pretty much copy and paste it to the others.
Yeah.
But this is a vBulletin site, and we have no other vBulletin sites.
Yeah, I mean, but to be fair, the forums, although it's sort of hosted by Canonical, it's kind of a community side thing, whereas the help.ubuntu.com was the official help for...
But that's the same. That's hosted by Canonical and maintained by the community.
Yes, but it's also the thing that is pointed to, and you went there and it looked really different from the site you may have came from, which was the Ubuntu.com site.
Yes, you're right.
So, yeah. And there was enough of a separation that I wasn't that uncomfortable with the Ubuntu forums, but I did, every time I went to help.ubuntu.com, I was like, ooh. Like
especially as it's on the same, it's a subdomain of Ubuntu.com, whereas Ubuntu forums is almost, you know, a completely separate website.
Yes. Yeah. But it's all done now, so that's good news.
Yeah, and it looks really good.
Yes, it does. Well done, web team.
BitTrip Runner has been added to the Software Center.
Ooh. This is your favourite game at the moment,
isn't it? It is a bit, yeah. I love it.
It's quite fun.
It is.
What is it?
It's, so you control this guy running across the screen, and he has to jump over obstacles, duck down a slide underneath obstacles, and, you know, basically get to the end of the level. But the only thing you can do is you can control his ducking and his jumping, but you can't control the speed that he runs at.
Okay.
And so it's kind of frustrating because, you know, the first level, all you do is press space to make him jump. And then the next one, you press another key to make him duck, but you can't stop him or slow him down and like take a jump a bit more slowly or something like that.
Is it two dimensional?
Yeah. Left to right. Like left to right. Excellent. It's got like a parallax thing going on. So it looks quite funky and 3D-ish.
But he's going left to right rather.
And it's got a retro style, big pixel type stuff and funky music.
And everything's like the level is designed in time with the music. So like each jump or slide is done in time with the sound in the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Right. I want to play Manic Miner now.
Wow. We should get that in the Software Center.
Yeah. Pull that one out of the bag. Related to that, it seems the most popular things in the Software Center are games.
Yeah, the report for April, the top
top 10 paid and top 10 free apps.
Yeah.
Well, most of the paid apps are games, aren't they?
Yeah.
So that's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy that the most top popular paid apps will be. Free apps, it's quite good that there's lots of gaming action going on because there's a lot of other cool stuff for free in the Software Center in terms of, you know, productivity applications.
You think something like GIMP or Inkscape like that would be the amount of brouhaha everyone complained about the fact we removed GIMP from the CD.
And no one's installing it.
And it's not at the top of the list of things people install. Says to me that, you know, maybe we were right.
Do you think more people have got into playing the simpler games since we've had phones? Because, like, the things like, I mean, I love Where's My Water on my phone, but there's no way that that's not the sort of game that people would complain about only being on Windows as being this massive, great, proper, serious gamer game. But do you think more people are playing games now that there's all these simpler ones that anyone can get
people
into?
People do still make those complaints, like even the simple games, like when Angry Birds was only available on iOS. And then eventually when it came to Android, it was like, yeah, finally, you know. But there was an article I read recently about... Guy from EA, when he was giving his talk at UDS, he was saying the demographic of gamers has completely changed in the 20 years. And it's women who buy games now. It's women who buy games on portable devices for casual gaming.
I bought Theme Hospital Port.
Ooh, really? Did you bought from Good Old Games?
Yeah.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Interestingly, the top 10 free apps also includes a point of sale application and a finance package.
Is the log working all right?
Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder whether it's entirely accurate.
The thing is, don't forget that this is just a 1-month snapshot.
Sure.
And we do promote stuff.
Right.
Stuff gets pushed up to the top of the list. So, for example, when Braid was first at the top of the list, it would have been in the banner ad at the top of
So lots of center. People bought point-of-sale applications.
Yeah.
Maybe a company did a big rollout.
Yeah.
What, and then that individually month. Everyone bought the app.
From the software center, yeah.
On their till.
Yeah.
So, ex-Canonical and eCryptFS developer Dustin Kirkland announced Zescro, a free service for backing up encrypted home directory credentials, and he announced that at UDS.
Yes, so it's cool.
Am I right in understanding this? Basically, that big string that it says, write this down, and then if you lose your password, you can still get your stuff. Is that a way of you putting that somewhere where you don't have to think about it, and then when you finally need it, you can get it?
Yes.
Cool.
That's good.
And it works really, really well. So when you... I saw Dustin give this talk and I was like, oh, I so totally need this.
Mm.
And so all my machines that have home directory encryption with eCryptFS, I pushed all the keys up to his service and
he has all your keys.
I was going to say, is this not a bit of a security risk giving somebody else the key to decrypt your encrypted partition?
No, because you don't actually give them the key. You give them a wrapped key or something. It's all very clever.
And you
it's
keep
all very
the
well explained. And I feel confident that Dustin Kirkland is not going to SSH in and steal all my data. I'm very confident.
Okay.
All I have to do now is remember where I stored the key.
No, you don't.
No, you can generate it again. As long as you know your password, you can generate the key.
Because the key is wrapped, encrypted by your password.
Right.
And so all you need is your password to unwrap that and then send that to them.
My brain's wrapped now.
Good old cryptography.
Yeah, follow his blog post about it. It's worth reading. If you use Encrypted Home on an Ubuntu system, it's a free service and it's really good. And Dustin is a lovely man.
Wicked.
And in Not About Ubuntu, the release of Fedora 17, codenamed Beefy Miracle, has been delayed a week and is now due on the 29th of May.
Yeah, next week. Week today, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not so much of a miracle, though. Do you know why it's got delayed? Is there anything particular?
No, I don't know, but I assume quality reasons. They want to make sure it's finished and ready. And
make sure it's beefy enough.
Yes.
Cool, and that's all in the bit about Ubuntu and not about Ubuntu this time. It's time for your feedback, and you've been very generous in what you've sent in. If you want to send us some feedback, listen out at the end of the show and we'll tell you how you can get in touch. But Gord Campbell posted on our website,
Canonical picked the wrong city. Shenzhen is the place to be unless you need to deal with the government.
This was about Canonical's office opening up in China later in the year, which is going to be in
Shanghai,
I believe, yes. So he's saying actually Shenzhen is where all the chip manufacturing and technology stuff goes on, isn't it?
Yes. Wow, you said that with such authority.
But maybe they do need to deal with the government. Maybe Ubuntu will run on the Chinese government computers.
So Chris Kenyon talked about the office in Taipei and, you know, over there. And also the fact we're opening a bunch of Dell stores. And it was funny, there's like hundreds of like Dell stores that are already open. There's hundreds more set to open. And there are even more that we haven't got to yet. There's so many hundreds of these little stores in China because the way they have their stores, they're not like big shops. They look like booths, like you get at a trade show, you know, space constrained.
Just in the street.
Kind of. And there's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those all over the country.
Mm.
And all the big name manufacturers like Dell have those kind of stores. And we've got hundreds of them branded Ubuntu.
Brilliant.
Wicked.
Spink102 posted on our website.
Laura, Kindles aren't shiny. They have a matte finish.
That's me told.
Yes.
You said it was shiny.
I think mine's shiny. My Kindle was shiny.
Mine is shiny.
Why?
Because I've got one of the older ones that's white, that's not a matte finish. It's got a shiny metal back.
Polished it.
So there, Mr. Spink102.
I don't think it is Spink102.
Spike.
Spitch.
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 Spike. Silly name. Long-time listener,
you've been told.
Yes, long-time listener Mads Rosendahl emailed us from Denmark.
No matter if the podcast is recorded in Studio A, B, C, or D, the sound quality is always fan-freaking-tastic. Even Alan's UDS interview. However,
was that the one I did outside the toilet?
Yes. Yep.
Yes, with the flush in the background.
You heard that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah.
That's about all we knew. However, the volume of the jingle seems to be much louder than your speech. You did mention the problems this causes in the car.
Yes.
Anyway, it was an absolute genius interview with the Ubuntu guy. He's a great speaker and has something very unique and cool to talk about.
Thanks very much, Matt.
Yes, it was. Yeah, sorry about the volume of the jingles. You know, get a better car.
Wow.
Isn't this noisy?
If you could open up the podcast in Audacity and run the normalized filter before you listen to it.
It's normalized, but I think what he needs is more compression.
Yes, that's right.
Feel free to send your hate mail to tony@tonywhitmore.co.uk.
When we build a podcast studio where we can control levels better and we have a full-time engineer, then it'll all be fine.
Yeah, even when we were at the B&B, it was scoping out where the podcast studio could be if we took over the B&B one day.
What B&B?
Oh, we're having the bathroom done.
Oh, I see. Okay. Wow.
Context is king. And just picking up on the Ubuntu interview that we did, or Alan did, there's another message we've had.
Hello, guys. It's Stephen from Ashtabula. Just calling to say thank you for the wonderful interviews that Alan did at the Ubuntu Developer Summit in Oakland, California. I guess Mr. Bacon had a very small travel commute bill for that, eh? One of the things, after listening to the discussion of Ubuntu, is can we have a discussion about Ubuntu-default-builder and how we can make our own versions of Ubuntu? Something to think about. Thank you for all that you do, guys. Talk to you later.
Right, Ubuntu-default-builder.
Tell us about that, Alan.
I've just realised that Alan hasn't got his headphones on, so he couldn't hear that message. It was really good, and he says nice things about your interview. He said it was really good. And would like to hear about how we can get hold of the Ubuntu-default-builder thing, which is the thing, I guess, that makes you build customized version of Ubuntu.
At which point, the three of us look blankly at Alan, hoping he would eliminate
it. And I was busily typing
in IRC. And he's typing away because he can't hear it.
So is that something that is available?
I think it's a set of scripts written by Martin Pitt. And it's used as a basis for creating derivatives like... the Ubuntu Business Remix, which we just put out a new version of, is created using that. And it's to make it easier to create all the necessary seed files and other bits and bobs that go to making an ISO image.
So is it apt-gettable? Or just go to a website?
I'm not sure, actually. I think it might be, actually.
Okay.
Carry on talking.
Okay, well, we've got a voicemail to play in that you won't be able to listen to, Alan. Which is from Ken Fallon. So while that's playing out, you can see if you can find out the answer to the question.
This is Ken from Hacker Public Radio. We're going to be recording episode 1000 soon. And to celebrate, 5150 is putting together a special show. He's looking for people to send in anniversary greetings. So please record a greeting today and email it to episode1000@hackerpublicradio.org. You can record it on your PC, on your phone or portable media player. And don't worry about the audio quality or file format. Just try to keep it short. That email address again is episode1000@hackerpublicradio.org. Thank you.
Well done, Hacker Public Radio. 1,000 episodes is not to be sniffed at, is it?
Indeed not.
So if you want to send in your greetings to them, you can do that using the methods that we just heard about. Alan.
Yes.
Yes, it's apt-gettable.
Yes, it is. Ubuntu Defaults Builder is in the repository and is, apt-gettable.
The package name is Ubuntu-default-builder.
It is indeed, yes.
Well, should be easy to find. Excellent. And that's all of your feedback.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds, Facebook and IRC channels. And, of course, our so.cl. No?
Social.
Social. I don't think we'll have that on there. Let us know what you think of our show and give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. Join us on Tuesday, the 5th of June, for our next live episode.
Yay!
Well, that was hard work, Tony. That one, wasn't it?
Well, at least I cheered. Everybody else seemed to be asleep already.
Yay!
Yay, well done, Laura.
Yay. Alan didn't hear you because he's not wearing his headphones.
Hmm?
Yeah, this is true. Oh, we're a real Mickey Mouse operation, aren't we?
Sorry, Mads. The quality's gone down the pan.
Right, I'm going to go and have a barbecue now. desktop! Hey.